Hey yo, and here we go, another episode of We Talk Music, back on the air and once again in your ear. I am Mo, and with me again is the King of the Casters, Chief Defender of the Faith, Mr. Brett Podcast. Brett, we got two people to talk to here today, so really you should not take too much more time for yourself. You've been talking too much as usual. Just get right to who the guests are.
All right. Well, I am happy to announce that we have a couple of guys. We have Mark McMaster and George Panagopoulos, and they are from Radio Free Universe. So, Mark, George, how are you?
Good. Yeah, great. Good. Thanks.
I'd like to point out right away how Brett will usually ask how to pronounce somebody's last name. I'd like to point out how confidently he just went into yours, George. Just right there.
Greek? Do you know how a lot of Opolis is? Because you didn't need to. That was great.
It just felt right. So hopefully it all worked out.
That was good.
Perfect. Well, the reason that, of course, we're here to talk to you is because you've got the new album that's called Love, physical out on May 22nd, but of course it's out on the streaming services now. And I mean, I know that Mo and I really dig it. So let's talk Love.
Oh. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that, kind of grabs me about this album, and really strong album. I know you've been getting excellent reviews on it. And I listened to it, and then I went back into your older discography in a very different sound.
You found it? I tried to get rid of it.
Maybe
the King Clancy stuff is out there, George.
Yeah, that's okay. That's all right. I like that stuff. The other stuff was keep going on your question, and I'm
no. Yeah. Well, it's just yeah. I mean, it's just about the band's evolution is really the question, because I mean, it's not that I obviously I can hear how you feel about it. I liked it. Don't get me wrong, but it's so different that I was really wondering if it was the same guys.
It is the same guy. There was different people involved. This is what happened. And this is why I kept the name. It's the name itself came to me kind of like, I'm going to call a band this, because after King Clancy parted ways, I was like, I got tired of riff-oriented guitar rock. I love riff-oriented guitar rock. I just got tired of making it. I got tired of the limitations. I got tired of the boxes that you sort of put yourself in, that people kind of got a guitar riff. And then, yeah, there's a guitar riff. There's no chorus. We're going to have to make something up. So you're writing to a bass line of music that's based on somebody's guitar riff, as opposed to I've got a great melody and a great lyric idea that kind of came to me or somebody, and I want to roll with this. And the songs on this record are all derived from melody and meaning, to kind of form together at the same time. And that's where the name kind of came from, that we were going to deliver what I felt was the truth of songwriting, as opposed to just like, well, I'm just going to look good and sing as hard as I can, right? And impress everybody with my great vocal range, as opposed to just writing some good songs and putting no limitations on serving that song. That's really what this was. So I kept the name. There's a long story about how me and Mark met, but I kept the name. And we sort of, this new thing happened, and it just went so well. I just kind of said, okay, great.
So this is far
more. The first
more
song was written without it, the intention of it being an RFU song.
Right. That's correct.
Now, which song was that then?
Star Child.
Oh, okay. Star
Child. Okay.
Which is a cool song. I really like Star Child.
Yeah. And so obviously, this is then is closer to what you want to be doing with your career. This is the sound that you, because it's a unique sound. I mean, I'm always lamenting that there's not much experimentation and new stuff out there today, like there was in the past. But I don't, maybe a little bit. The only band I've heard that I think it sounds at all like you, and this is a big compliment because one of my favorite bands, is Dr. Dog, who has any sort of similarity at all. And I think that, that's what really, really strikes me about this is it's a very inventive sound. So tell me about the process of getting to this sound.
It's just absolutely no limitations whatsoever. I go to the Beatles. That's my point of reference, because I'll never be as good. But they had this ability to just like write whatever style of music they wanted, and it just still sounded like them. Like it was just they and George Martin brought you know this new world to them, and that's when I really started to. When he was sort of cut loose and he kind of became more of a member of the band to me, when they sort of cut loose and they allowed for anything to happen and they gave him the resources to do that, and the music just became this amazing experience. So I just have always dreamed of being able to do that. And until I met Mark, I had an idea of how to do it, obviously, because I'd worked in studios in LA and stuff like that with, you know, producers and been around the block a few times that way. But having a facility that you have free access to and with another person at your side that is absolutely devoted to that outcome. So Mark also played a great devil's advocate with me because, you know, sometimes it's always good to have somebody that you sort of disagree with a lot when you're making music in a positive way, because, it really makes you fully explore what the song wants, not what your ego wants, if that makes any sense.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Do you consider that, Mark, then kind of your role is to challenge the band, to not let them get comfortable, to push themselves?
Yeah, I think so. I think we both challenge our mediocre ideas and help to elevate them. And I think, you know, George talks about the differences, and we do have lots of differences in opinion, but we always have had this kind of same opinion about what makes something great and how to get there. And over time, we developed a trust where, you know, when the other person challenged us, eventually it was like, well, I have to go with this because they've proven themselves right so many times before.
Do you kind of have an idea?
Yeah, which is my...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, you're probably going to ask a question that I was going to say, but just ask it just in case.
Well, I was just going to ask if you kind of had, like, remember when that moment occurred. Like, when did you find that trust in your relationship?
We've done a few things before for Radio Free Universe. And somewhere around... again, I'm going to say it was probably Star Child, where he started to understand... For me, anyway, because a lot of my stuff comes from the ether. Like, it's just, I hear this melody, and a lot of times I would literally just sing a melody, and you mumble it, and the words are just there if you listen. Sometimes, if you listen carefully enough, and sometimes they're not, but a lot of times they are. That approach, for example, started to happen with Star Child, and what I started to notice is that that's not the only way. The other way is that sometimes they come through a person and all the rigor that they've established in their life, how they derive meaning and how they derive importance. And that's why they're coming to that person. So it's not just something that comes from the air. So I think that happened on Star Child. And when we were done it, there was a way deeper understanding of that trust, because we'd done some other stuff two together and how to proceed with it.
So then when it comes to overall, like, you know, writing the lyrics, I guess maybe just break down the process just a little bit more. So like when the idea starts, like, do you just kind of start with the germ and then do you come together with the group? Do you work it yourself?
Well, really, that's just me. Really, all just to be blunt, these songs originated from me and Mark's time working on them. Certain parts got added, you know, maybe like keyboard parts and things like that, bass parts through band work. But I call all of these songs are, and I learned this from Daniel Lanois, this is something that I like to call, and he calls, the level two, which is, it's not just jamming in a room together, hashing things out. It's sort of, you put your song, the actual song down, you get a lyric and a vocal. And Mark was very big on this, and he can jump on us too, but he wanted to make sure that we had lyrics and vocal complete before we started adding too much to the song. So we would just basically record a vocal. Sometimes it became the vocal that you hear, and we would add things as it demanded, as intuition called or ideas came. We would add those strokes, and if it didn't sound good, we'd remove them. Is that a good way to say, Mark, the lyrically anyway? And then Mark, you can probably touch on the lyric process a bit more.
Yeah, sure. I mean, often the seed of the song was a melodic idea that came from George and a lyrical hook that came from me that just happened to work well together. There were a few times where that happened. The lyrics we spend a lot of time on, and it can get pretty heated. Because we both care a lot about them. But when we agree and we're both excited about a line or an idea, then we know it's going to work out.
So it takes time, yeah. Sometimes three or four sittings, yeah, just to get the lyrics right.
But, I mean, it's great. I think it's awesome that you're willing to take that time, and also that you have the kind of relationship where you can kind of hash things out, because I'm in complete agreement, you know. When you have a couple of creative people and you put them in a room, you know, you should try to make each other better, and you should try to make the whole process work better.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. And we're both sensitive people and that we're tuned into these things, but neither of us is delicate, you know. we don't bruise easily.
Yes,
so we're tuned into these things, but we can let our ideas take a beating too.
Yeah, that's true.
One of the things that you guys in your press kit had talked about was that you have your antennas open to bring these ideas in, and then you're spreading them out to the, you know, your listeners' antennas. The idea, so is that kind of the concept? Because this is something I've really been interested in lately, and I really believe in the idea that ideas and art and music and these things, they kind of exist in the universe. It's just some people have the skill set to channel them for some reason and access them. Is that something that you kind of agree with?
I would say myself, 100%, that's my entire philosophy, is that you're, over time, you build these neural paths in your brain, and they become antennas to something that's inexplicable, and we can't even begin to explain it. But then it becomes a game of football, though, because sometimes you're getting the information, and sometimes it just turns off and you don't have the full picture. And this usually happens almost always when you're working with somebody, whether it's remotely or in the same space together. It's funny how the blanks will just fill themselves in, because the universe will give that information to the right person at the right time. And if you're not a jerk, right, and you can sit there and say, I don't like this idea, like with Love Right Now, I hated the lyric. I thought it was just like atrocious because I couldn't hear it in the song, but I didn't. I just said, okay, I'm going to calm down. Like, I have to take myself through the process. I'm going to calm down. I'm going to actually listen to his idea, and then I'm going to sing it. And then I'm going to listen back to it. And we did that. And when I did that, I was like, yeah, that's amazing. That's the best thing I've ever heard. I can't believe I didn't like it. Right. That's kind of how you have to make yourself do that. You have to let the other person's ideas come through and sort of identify when it's somebody's ego trying to be a part of it, or somebody's, you know, this inner connection that takes them over, that says, no, I have this idea and you should listen to it, you know, that kind of thing. And Mark should speak on this too, because it's going to be different.
Perfect.
No, I don't really have that much to add. I think George comes at these things from a little more new age point of view than I do. And I come at it from the point of view of a kind of engineer mind. And we just have to respect the other way of coming to these things.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, it must be interesting to relate, you know, having the, you know, the technical background of being the technical person. Like, do you ever have to kind of rein in things just to be like, okay, well, this is the way we have to do it. We kind of have to put it in this box.
I'm more likely to come at things that way. And I think it's good to have someone remind you that there are no have-tos and no rules.
Yeah, it's a good balance. I mean, not to say that I'm actually, when it comes to the equipment with the recording process, I'm extremely technical. I spent 6 months finding exactly what the best gain structure for the console that we're using is. And I made Mark, you know, run around, until we had that completely figured out, until we can both listen to what was happening and say that console is working at peak right now. That's where it sounds good. And repeatedly, I might be on a mix, and he'd be like, "You're breaking all your rules, and it sounds like it." And then every time we go back and set those faders back a little bit, and reel in the gain structure, look at the DAW and see if it's not coming off the DAW too hot. That's a digital audio workstation for people who might not know that, but most of the listeners probably do. But we reel that back and make sure that that it's coming in at, not too much or blowing anything out of the water, because it does take away from the voltage some, which is important, really important. And I'm really into that stuff. I'm really into good equipment. And so is Mark, right? For very similar reasons.
Agreed.
So
yeah, it's not like one of us is all one way and the other one's all the other way. You know, we both have elements of, both sides of these things all the time. Makes it easier to understand what's going on for the other person if you've got a little bit of that going on yourself.
There is one clear separation that's really cool, though. A lot of times, Mark's reflection on the piece will be more of an emotional perspective, like girl, guy. Mine would be a spiritual perspective. So what happens is we have like several layers to the lyrics, because they could be interpreted in different ways, which I love. You know, Dylan used to do that with nobody's help, but having that has been great.
So how about the band's overall image, your style, your clothes, your videos, and just all of that stuff? How much effort and thought is put into that? And Mark, do you have any part of that as well?
Well,
go ahead, Mark.
If you were talking about, say, Love Right Now, that came together pretty naturally. Like, I don't think the guys talked to each other about what they were going to wear.
No, I did that. I told them.
Yeah, you did. Well, I mean, you wanted people to dress up, but you didn't give them like very.
Yeah, the fact that they were all going to wear what they wore, I said go crazy, but it all just came together. That's what was cool about it. But as far as the colorings, and I've always spoken to Mark about sound or songs having colors to me. Like I see things or hear things, and I see colors. I'm not in an autistic way, just in an emotional sort of inner response. I can identify a song, and it might be orange or brown or whatever, right? And because of that, I had this idea that, we could show that in what we're kind of reflecting to people. So a lot of the video, after the first video, I didn't mind it at all. I really liked it. But we did two, one isn't out yet. But then from there on, I kind of decided that I'd want to be a little bit more reflective of the colors, that the fact that we have no genre can be reflected a little bit. And that's when you're using lighting, it's very hard to do that. So you only have so many colors that actually look good that you can do that with, if that makes any sense.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I really get that, the idea of associating colors to, I mean, Jimi Hendrix did that, associated colors to songs and songs and people and objects. I kind of do the same thing. So, it's interesting to hear you talk about that.
Yeah, I think it's as many perspectives or perception, that you can, your physical perceptions as you can mix up. I think the more creative you can see things, and the faster you'll be able to connect to things.
So my I have to say the song Even Angels is one of the three singles you released so far. I'm surprised this didn't dominate the charts, because it's just so insanely catchy. But it has a lyric in it that made me stop and go, and it's a simple lyric, and I'm probably going to get it wrong here, but it's a simple lyric, but it just for some reason really touched me, and that's you're too young to be so old. And I don't know what it is about that lyric, but that's just one of those things.
You're too old to be so young.
Oh, you're too old to be. Yeah, okay. You're too old to be so young. That was it. Sorry, I got it mixed up. I told you I would. But when I heard that, I went like, that's just it hit me for some reason. And that's the funny thing about lyrics and songs, that they can do that. They can just touch you, and you don't know what moment it'll be.
That's a good one. That's a good lyric for me because it makes me choke up when I hear it. So probably there's some emotion that got transferred to you. To me, it's about, you know, the whole song is about my dad. So essentially the journey of him becoming old, and he's basically compressed all time in his head. So at any given moment, he could be, you know, 30, and I could be his brother. And just to see that happen to a person where their whole life just gets, it's like a landslide. Like I say, a lifetime caught in a landslide where your whole life just collapses. The mountain that you've built just melts. So that's kind of where all that comes from.
Actually, that explains kind of that idea that it's about your dad. The video also makes a lot of sense that way too then.
Well, the video is that the director's interpretation, which was he thought it could be about a person's life and the emotional thing they're going through, and maybe that person was going to kill themselves. And then there was but he also referred to there was a person with Alzheimer's in that video as well, right? And he's mm-hmm. making a reference to that. And he's going to, as opposed to end it, he's going to continue living. So it's great that, again, it's really, really important in songwriting that you put your intentions in there, and people will argue with me, but not for me. You put what you want in there, but you want it so people can relate to it from perspectives that they have going on in their life. You know what I mean? So maybe for the director, he passed through those experiences and he wanted to communicate them, and he can contribute his artistic vision to it.
So with an album like this, how difficult is it to pick the singles? Because, I mean, there's so many. I mean, my two favorite songs on the album actually aren't singles yet. I mean, there's so many strong songs.
Awesome. Give them to the radio guys, and then they're sending them out May 18th, I think, to all the American stations there that might fit this, and they're gonna try to see what those people think. You know, it's a process, so. They'll probably lean on Love Right Now because it's just, I guess it's, yeah, I don't know. I love the song, but other people like it too. It's a good message right now. And if we can continue to get more marketed as singles, then I guess why wouldn't we, right? But it's all a process. We have no idea. Yeah. We're just lucky to have these people helping us.
Yeah, we basically left it up to other people who have more experience in that field than we do. And that way our pet songs weren't singled out. It was what the people who had an objective opinion thought.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. Well, go ahead, Brett.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. There's no question about it because especially in this case, well, like I understand in some bands' cases, they're really proud of like maybe one or two songs and have that immense feeling of like, yes, this should be the single. But in your case, I mean, I think you've got eight songs that you should be really proud of. And so, you know, whatever the single is, it should just be whatever is best for the band.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you. That's huge. It means a lot because that's, in essence, that's how I feel about them. They're all our little offspring, and they all have these, you know, connections to make with people. And the funny response I got back was like, well, they're all getting like equal kind of, they're all around the same amount of plays every day. And I'm like, well, there's probably a reason for that. Like that's weird. People think that's weird. And I'm like, well, maybe it's just people connect with them in different songs, you know, like it's fine. Just like you guys do. The whole thing was made as an experience to put on, and you know, the record, the vinyl, I have to say, like four songs on one side, four on the other, for me, is the epitome of my music career. Listening to that vinyl, how it sounds. I'm super happy. Like if I did nothing else, I'm fine because of that. That I was able to make something that, you know, made and recorded and co-produced and did all this stuff with, and I can play it on vinyl, and it totally blows the CD out of the water and the MP3s, and it just sounds excellent.
It's you mentioned 8 songs. It comes in at just under a half hour, which is, right. Nowadays it's very unusual. And people seem to be taking advantage and putting more and more songs on because we're in such a digital medium. Do you think that there is an ideal length for, you know, songs and albums and those type of things?
I think what you have to do is when something isn't not in fashion, or when something's in fashion, you kind of have to find the opposite reason to do it sometimes. And the reason is for me that I don't do a million social media posts. I do one really good one and make sure people see it. And when people go and interact with the page, they're more likely to join because there's just quality posts. And if quality songs are the same thing. You should interact. You got to get out there. But having 5 posts to salt your fans every day, especially if you're not some established, you know, amazing group that people, you're touring and big stadiums, and, you know, that's fine. I get it. You're going to do that. You have that bandwidth. But for people in our situation, I think it's really important to exercise quality above quantity. And the same thing goes with the songs. And the beauty of it is when we made the vinyl, well, everyone knows that in vinyl, less is more. So 4 songs aside is the perfect real estate for an album. The song, the sound quality is exceptional, because that's another reason why, right? So the really, you know, quality
it's
is important.
Not that we ran out of ideas and just,
yeah, no,
stuff.
Yeah, we didn't run out of ideas, but we just wanted to make sure that there was 8 great things, and then we'll do another, you know, record, I guess.
Makes sense. I mean, that seems to be the goal. But how long did the writing process for the album take as a whole?
Oh boy, Mark, you got
it was
the
about
brain.
A year and a half between Star Child and Love Right Now in the writing process, and then yeah, maybe another few months more. It was 21 months maybe between starting to write Star Child and having everything mastered.
So then are you guys working towards that? I mean, given that we're all kind of stuck at home, are you working towards the follow-up, or are you just focusing on Love Right Now?
I don't, my brain just doesn't work like that. So where am I just sort of, I've got some ideas. I always have ideas. You can put me and Mark in a room and say, write songs, and we'll do it. So we're not too worried about that. I've always got ideas every day. Right now has been, I just look at it as a benefit. So I'm just spending time with my kids because I can, and
yeah.
It's been awesome. And it's been so fulfilling because I've been running around like crazy before all this. And this was a sort of and it was supposed to continue, and we were supposed to do a tour to support the record and all this. And this all just happened. And I'm the type of person that is going to just look at it and go, that's fine. I can reorganize things and make this work to keep me, to make my life even better. So we just look at it as it's a crazy thing and people are dying. But for me, it's a personal opportunity to grow, right? If that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah, for sure. How about you, Mark?
The downtime, I'm really down right now. I'd like to be on top of projects, but I've really just been relaxing. And
I think it's kind of needed. Yeah, if we like pretty
the spring, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great way to look at it. We've been pushing pretty hard up until now, and then I'm going to have to sort of get back on the horse and do a lot of social stuff this week and the week after. To get the plug to radio prepared, right? I'm just being
I'm
totally
ready to package CDs and send to radio stations.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. We got to get about 220 CDs going out to US AAA and non-com stations. And so That's my job. I got a hallway full of packaging materials and an office full of CDs and a database of addresses, and I have to bring them all together.
Wow.
Yeah, he does that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Better you than me. I think that's...
Again, it's fascinating to me because it's these jobs of a band that so many fans don't necessarily know about. You know, you see the songwriting, the going into the studio, the performing live on tour. You don't see the like hallway of CDs that you're sending out to the radio stations, the hours spent on writing one social post or something.
Yeah, it's crazy. People think you're going to get, oh, well, we have a team. You go, so we got a publicist and we have all this stuff and there's two radio promoters, thank God, but they're not going to do all the mail letters.
They're not licking stamps.
Yeah. the more you get, either the more, you know, the more you do, period. It just becomes, you have to do more. So there's this insane thing that I put out a few years ago, and it's really, a lot of people just say, oh, I'm a musician, and that's great. Now you don't have to be successful, and everyone understands why you have no money, right? It's because of this that I can't do it. Oh, it's because of this and this and this that this happened. And, you know, just, you got to just take all that crap away. There's no reason at all for you not to be able to do it. I mean, you just have to keep, you know, you have to take every opportunity, and you have to like respond to the emails that you get. If somebody says, hey, I've got a write-up for you, that's great. Are you going to post it? Are you going to promote the write-up? Have you got some way of getting money to do that? If you don't have money, like, you know, go get some somehow. I know people come to me and say, can you make my record? I want you to sign me and make my record. And they're like, then do all the stuff for me for free. And then I think to myself, well, people spend $200,000 to go to school, and you want music to be your career, and you want me to teach you everything for free. You have to put something, you have to figure out a way, if you want to be serious about it, to make that happen, like to put your life in front of yourself and go, okay, well, how am I going to do this? Like, you know, bands, it's sad for me because bands can all get 9-to-5 day jobs and take their money and collectively do a lot. The successful bands I've seen, that's exactly what they do. Everybody works, they all contribute, and they put it out there. You know, in this case, this project is, there is a band and they're all really into it, but it sort of just started with me and Mark, right? Really. And so we're doing that as best we can.
So then I'm also interested in like the choice of Hamilton and, you know, building up a studio there. I mean, the studio sounds really cool and stuff like that. So maybe discuss some of that.
The studio. So I met Mark in 2014, Mark?
14, yeah.
And a great guy named Rick Taylor, who's the local writer here. I mean, he's the guy that all the bands, you know, go to get written up. You know, he knows what's happening in music across the board. And I was, you know, we became friends, and he knew Mark, and then we met at the St. Hollywood. And I had a place, like a century home, with a really old, with a near century console. My console was 40 years old. It was a Canadian Ward Beck console, and they call that the Canadian Neve. But it had so many issues because it was so old. I'd just been throwing thousands of dollars into this thing, and I was recording in my home with low ceilings, which is against everything that I preach about sound reflection, what'll happen. You know, I hate basement recordings. I hate them. I hate doing them. I hate being involved with them. There's just too many limitations, and I'm just totally being a prima donna. Like, I know people make great records in the basement, not me, right? So when I met Mark, he was just, yeah, I got this church, you know, and I got these ideas and stuff. So I went to go over there, and I sang in the church, and I was like, whoa, sounds amazing here. And then he showed me his AutoCAD that he'd done. He completely designed the space in AutoCAD by himself, like nuts, everything. He'd read a bunch of books on acoustical, you know, engineering and stuff like this. And he put all that into play, and he designed like what I would consider a class A recording space. Okay. And I was just like, you know, I qualified all of it. I asked him a bunch of questions, as we do to each other. And then you know, we even had, so we'll get into that later, but we even had the discussion about 44.1 versus 96 versus 192, all that, right? So long story short, he went out and I just said, hey, then do it, build a space, and I'll come in and I'll bring what I got. And then when we thought about the board, I just sort of put it out there that, you know, we really should get a real console. And I had this other house that I sold, and he had that, don't ask how I got it, long story. And he had some stuff. So we put our money together, and this poor guy in the States was dying of cancer, who had this beautiful Neve 5088, pretty much new, right? So we got $160,000 board fully loaded for a song, right? Really, it was so, you know, not cheap, but enough that we could just afford it. And then we put our outboard equipment in, and you can continue, Mark, because it goes on and on. Built it in stages. He should really talk about it.
When we first got the console, the control room was only being built. And I would have been content to just like leave it in the boxes, but George is like, no, we got to get this thing out and set up. And so it was set up on the live room floor while the control room was being built. And then 8 months later, we moved it in to the room.
Which was important just so I can get my head around the piece that we were using. Right. I'm really into knowing everything about the equipment, how it works, where it works best at, because when you're capturing a performance, you can't be thinking about that stuff. It has to be figured out when you're in the middle of doing a mix, same kind of thing. You have to have all that figured out.
Yeah. So we did have the luxury of making a bunch of recordings out on the live room floor that didn't matter,
right,
initially, so that we could experiment without consequence.
But big difference when we moved into the room that was designed, mixing in there was like slicing butter with a hot knife versus, you know, cutting a rock open it with your bare hands. It was so much easier. And so you just leave the room and it sounded better. And it didn't sound like, oh, I got to go back and there's all this stuff happening. None of that was going on. It was 100 times better, and everything was easy, right? For the mix purpose, not so much making the song, but mix purpose was easier.
So, as somebody who's really in tune with their spiritual side, did you find recording in an ex church? Do you find that there's an energy in there, George, that really helps you?
I mean, probably not. I don't really think that's where. Like, I don't know if. Okay. So if I'm going to talk spiritually, so if I have an out of body experience and I'm having a very low frequency out of body experience, I'd be dealing with beings in the first, or what I say would be the second house, like the next dimension, which is usually just people's recorded history in, you know, just passing around and passing through you, which is great. And it's out there. I think there's different levels of where songs come from, and my best work is usually, I think it's beyond that realm. So I don't know if I really tap into that. I know this sounds crazy, but I kind of feel like it's from a slightly different frequency, if that makes sense.
No, it's very interesting. I mean, we've talked to a lot of musicians who have recorded in, you know, Abbey Rose or places like that, or,
yep,
you know, Muscle Shoals, some of the most, you know, well-known and respected and iconic studios, and that that there's an energy that they usually feel from the, or maybe it's an inspiration just from being in that. So I was so curious as to whether or not a former church would hold anything as well.
Well, I've sung in Abbey Road, and the energy in Abbey Road is the room sounds great. Like, it sounds amazing. You sing in that room, and everything you sing is perfect. So the energy that everyone's talking about is I'm going to be the guy that's more realistic for a second. You know, Muscle Shoals, the room sounds great. All these places, right, that always work out, it's because whatever freak of thing that happened, whether it was a tuned room or not tuned room, we're playing in a space where it just feels great to play music because it sounds good. And that's the number one thing that a musician is dealing with the bass frequencies of the universe, like the lowest, you know, 20 hertz is pretty low. I mean, below that, the way the Earth is turning, you know. But above that, basically, like, that's the lowest frequencies that we communicate on. And then above, you know, we go into many, you know, microwaves and millimeter waves, and then, you know, light, you know, you name it, right? All the harmonics. I think there's universal harmonics that come down to sound, right? But the bottom line is, we're working in the sound world. And so if that doesn't sound and feel good, you're not going to create the magic that you need to in the upper dimensions. That's the way I sort of look at it.
Yeah, I would look at that and say people would have a sense of spiritual connection to those rooms that was derived from the technical expertise that went into them. I think the technical expertise and the dimensions and the designs of the room are what led to people having a spiritual connection, because those performances wouldn't have been possible otherwise.
Going back to Sun,
wouldn't have been possible otherwise.
Yeah, going back to Sun Records, where that hearing Elvis's voice in that space, right? Like, amazing.
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't get better. I mean, it wasn't treated, but the room just sounded amazing to sing in for a one microphone situation, right?
Yeah, well, and I've been there, and it's such an interesting studio anyways. I mean, it doesn't look like anything per se, but then of course you think of all the magic that's occurred there, but you know, I think so much of that was Sam and his style of production.
Style of production, and he never picked anyone that sucked.
Yeah.
He sent Johnny Cash home, right? Like, they sent them home a couple of times, right? So, I mean, that's pretty heavy. You know, you're basically, you know, that's what you're dealing with. But they're for sure, they have to be able to sound their best, you know. And it boils down, there's a technical launching pad that we all musicians need. And that's why the best gear is important. I've sat in a crappy studio and recorded for weeks and got nowhere. Go to a great one, like, with everything's perfect, your headphone mixes, like the number one selling feature about Ocean Way is Alan Sides talking about headphone mixes. You know, he's got all this incredible equipment, you know, you name it, you've got it at your disposal, every piece of great gear ever made. But the guy's like, if the headphone mix sucks, you're done, right? Without the artist being able to perform, you can't make music.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really important.
Sir, so I just want to ask you about, I mentioned that my favorite songs weren't part of your singles yet. Divided We Fall is very close to being my favorite on the album. I really like that one. But my favorite, I think this song's brilliant. And I'm trying to decide right now if it's my favorite song of 2020. It's been back and forth, whether or not it is. And that's, I know you wrote this one for about the relationship with your wife, Georgia. Circle. I think Circle's a brilliant song.
Yeah, and that will actually be a single after Love Right Now, so for sure. And that is, yeah, I love. I knew that. We knew that right away. We were like, this is a great song.
Like, it really is.
It's I love that. And I mean, Mark, it came from talking about my wife. Mark was really super easy to connect with it because he's been through similar. You know, he's a very romantic guy. You know. So it was easy to sort of collaborate and make this thing happen. I love that song, and yeah, it was amazing with a guitar and a beat. It could have been done just like that with nothing, but you know, we let things happen, and it didn't get worse. So that's good.
Yeah, I guess.
It's so honest, you know. That's the thing about it. It's not like other singles. It's not, you know. I don't know if it's as catchy as Even Angels. But it resonates in a different way, than pretty much any other song. And that's what makes it so wonderful.
I think it was also going through a period of trying to like the melody to sort of do to inject melody, like to make sure that. When we wrote the chorus, I had in my mind that this feeling that I needed to write a moving melody, like that's something where it just kind of meet me by the sea, right? And I was born, and it would move around, and it would kind of sit, and it would be above the verse, It would make you feel like you're in a different sort of stratosphere, yet the chords are almost identical to the verse. Most people would not even know that.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's the same chords.
It's a tremendous song. I don't know. I listen to a lot of music. So for me to say, because as doing this, you know, for me to say that it's in contention for my favorite song of 2020 wow. is something, because that's a lot of music.
Yeah, you guys probably talk to people every day. That's crazy.
Practically, yeah, pretty much. How many interviews we had so far this year? About 80, Brett?
I think we're only at like 50 right now. 50, 60.
It's 50, 60. Well, there's two today. So, you're our favorite so far today, because we haven't done another one yet. No, I'm just kidding.
See, you're nailing it, Tom.
You guys have been really generous with your time. I'm actually looking at, and this is about, I think it's, Brett, do you have anything else? Or should we give these guys a chance to promote their stuff?
Totally let them tell the folks where to find Radio Free Universe.
Like the .ca, you mean? Or
promote everything.
Promote your stuff.
Oh, so, yeah, we're radioforuniverse.net for you people that don't know what a .ca is, Canada, eh? Also, Facebook, just search Radio Free Universe, and also Instagram, Radio Free Universe, and Twitter. Well, I don't love Twitter because of people these days on Twitter, but RF Universe seems to be all politics, but it's there too. Come and say hi. It's awesome.
Well, and
hopefully we'll be in your town.
Yeah, I mean, I know I'd love for you guys to come to Calgary because we'd love to see you, and you know, hopefully music looks live music looks good at some point again. I know we're all interested and excited to be able to get back to seeing live music, but honestly, I hope that everybody takes a chance to listen to the album Love, because we love it, so everybody else should too. honestly, it's really good stuff, and we thank you so much for coming on the show, George, Mark, and we would just wish you all the best.
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Anytime. Happy to chat, and look forward to chatting again.
Awesome. You guys have a great day, and I love Calgary, so I can't wait to come out there.
That's great. Well, we can't wait to see you. So awesome. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
Bye.
Bye now. I've seen within, I've done without.
stars meant to shine, but we fall.